Good morning. This is the time set for the hearing on the forfeiture of office or other discipline of Councilmember Winkle. On June the 15th of 2017, in a public meeting, the council unanimously voted to charge Councilmember Winkle with conduct constituting grounds for forfeiture of office or other discipline. The charges included two charges under the city charter, specifically violations of sections 206B2A and 206B2D of the charter. Also on June the 15th, in a public meeting, the council unanimously adopted procedures for hearings on forfeiture of office or other discipline of a council member. The procedures are intended to ensure a fair, impartial, efficient, and orderly hearing. These are the procedures that we are going to follow in today's hearing. I'm now going to give you a brief overview of how the hearing will proceed. This is not a trial. The rules of evidence that would apply in a trial in a courtroom do not apply. However, the procedures allow me to exclude evidence if it is irrelevant or cumulative. The witnesses will be placed under oath by the clerk. All fact witnesses that are testifying will be excluded from the hearing room so that they cannot hear the testimony of the other witnesses. They will also be asked not to listen to the testimony via the telecast upstairs or on a computer or other mobile device, or to discuss their testimony or any other person's testimony with anyone other than the attorneys. Attorneys refer to this as the rule of exclusion or simply as the rule. This rule will not be applied to Councilmember Winkle, his wife Erica Varela, or other character witnesses. They may remain in this room. The order of the proceedings is similar to most hearings and trials. That is, each attorney will make an opening statement. Each of you will have 10 minutes for that. Then there will be direct examination, cross-examination, and redirect examination of the witnesses. Character witnesses will be limited to 3 per side and 10 minutes per witness. Then rebuttal testimony and evidence will be taken, if any. Finally, Mr. Workin will make a closing statement followed by Mr. Lasota's closing. Mr. Workin and Mr. Lasota each have up to 3 hours to present their cases. You can use this time however you see fit. However, we are going to stick to the 3-hour time limit per side. The city clerk is keeping time and will put up a yellow indicator when you get to within 2 minutes of a 10-minute limitation, and a red indicator means that the time has elapsed. Council members are free to question the witnesses. Pursuant to the rules, I will determine all questions of procedure, rule on objections, and strive to conduct the hearing in an efficient and fair manner. Like a trial before a judge, a jury, or in a courtroom, members of the public will not be allowed to present statements or otherwise participate in the hearing. So there will be no blue cards as in a normal city council meeting. The public was notified of this in the public notice. Now this is important. If a member of the public is disruptive, they will be removed. You will not receive further warnings. Under the city charter, this council is the sole judge of the fitness of its members for office, and it is going to base its decisions solely on the evidence presented in this hearing. As a preliminary matter, prior to this hearing, Mr. Lasota submitted a letter seeking the removal of Mr. Workin, and by separate letter, Mr. Lasota sought to have the discipline limited and settled with an offer of payment of a fine, a letter of censure, and Councilmember Winkle's agreement to not consume alcohol for the remainder of his term. Unless there is a motion by council to consider these requests by Mr. Lasota, they will be deemed denied. Hearing no motion, these requests are denied. We will move forward with the hearing today. I will remind the attorneys that while this hearing is not a trial, I expect the same level of professionalism and decorum as if it were a trial. The rules of evidence do not apply, so please be judicious and concise in making objections, if any, and do not engage in speaking objections. If I need additional information to rule on an objection, I will ask for it. Let's begin. Will the attorneys please introduce themselves for the record and tell me the names of each of the witnesses you intend to call or are considering calling to testify at the hearing today? Mr. Workin.
Good morning, Mr. Mayor and council members. My name is Charles Workin. I'm here with my partner, Susan Goodwin, from the firm of Gust Rosenfeld, serving as special counsel to the city today. The witnesses we intend to call are Tempe officers Anibal Espinosa and Eric Jensen. Department of Public Safety forensic scientist Herlinda Graham, Councilmember Ryan Winkle, and City of Mesa Public Information Officer Randy Policar.
Thank you. Mr. Lasota.
Good morning, Mayor and members of the council. I intend to call Ryan Winkle, and also I would like to state that I have objections just based on cumulative nature to witnesses. I can make them now, or I can make them as the witnesses are called, whatever your preference is.
Well, why don't we see how, if maybe an argument that it's cumulative might be more relevant once there's an accumulation of evidence. So why don't you make them as the witnesses come up?
Oh, and also, Mr. Mayor, I have my exhibits that I'd like to distribute to the council, if I may approach.
Yes, please do.
Thank you.
Feel free to just give those to the clerk, and they'll pass them around. I've been reminded that it would be a good idea for everyone to check your phone, make sure that it's not going to be disruptive during the hearing today. All right, thank you. Could all of the fact witnesses just named by the attorneys please come forward? Thank you. I'm instructing all of you that you may be called to testify at this hearing. Everyone other than Councilmember Winkle, Erica Varela, and the character witnesses must wait out in the hallway or outside the building until you're called to testify. You are not allowed to talk about your testimony with anyone other than the attorneys. You're not allowed to listen to the testimony of another witness, so you are not permitted to go upstairs and view the telecast, and you are not allowed to listen to the hearing on your phone or tablet or other device as it is being streamed or broadcast. After you testify, you will need to go back into the hallway or outside this building. You're not permitted to be in this room, listen to testimony, or talk about your testimony until I release you from the admonition. The reason for this admonition is to ensure fair and impartial testimony. Do each of you understand?
Yes, sir.
Thank you. We will give the fact witnesses a moment to leave, and please close the doors behind you. Thank you. We'll now begin the hearing, and we'll begin with openings. Mr. Workin, please proceed with your opening.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. And good morning again to you and to the members of the council. On June 15, I presented to this council a summary of some of the evidence regarding the DUI arrest of Councilmember Ryan Winkle on May the 7th. Based on that evidence, this council then charged Councilmember Winkle with conduct constituting conduct for forfeiture of his office or other discipline. The charge focused on two grounds for discipline found in the city charter. They are, as you know, violating the code of ethics and conduct demonstrating a lack of fitness for office. Today is the day to more formally and thoroughly present the evidence relevant to those grounds. That evidence will be in the form of the witnesses who have just been sworn, their testimony, and the exhibits which have been filed with the clerk of the city and copies of which have been provided to you in the binders. In summary, that evidence will show that Councilmember Winkle, despite a previous extreme DUI conviction in 2009 and claiming to have learned his lesson from that experience, again, drank heavily on May the 7th at several public events while living his role as a council member of this city. He then again drove his car while extremely intoxicated. After being stopped by Tempe police, he repeatedly lied to them by denying that he had been drinking, a lie that he has now admitted. He refused a preliminary breath test to determine his blood alcohol content, and he initially refused a blood test. Eventually, he consented to a blood test, one that showed a blood alcohol concentration of 0.22, nearly three times the legal limit. In the days that followed, he revealed how he really felt and what he really thought about his DUI arrest. He did not express shame or remorse. Instead, he said to others that it was not a big deal, and he formulated a plan to spin the events of that evening, that early morning, and part of it included his intention to discredit the Tempe police officer. Eventually, faced with the irrefutable evidence against him, he pled guilty to extreme DUI in a plea bargain that enabled him to avoid a conviction for what we refer to as super extreme DUI. Now, whether that evidence supports a finding of the ethics of a violation of the ethics code or conduct demonstrating a lack of fitness to hold office or both is for you to determine. As stated in the city charter, and as has been recognized already this morning, this council is the judge of the grounds for forfeiture of office or other discipline. And also, as stated in the charter, whether to impose any discipline or what discipline to impose is left to your sole discretion. I will speak to those points after the presentation of the evidence. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Workin. Mr. Lasota.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor and members of council. And I'd like to start by saying there are certainly a lot of facts to this that go unmentioned by Mr. Workin, as I've stated previously, and we will hear from Mr. Winkle in detail about those, the circumstances surrounding his arrest for DUI, what he's done to rehabilitate himself, and his, despite what Mr. Workin says, significant contrition. Mr. Workin, unfortunately, has throughout this process sought to present a completely one-sided picture here instead of doing what I believe he was hired to do, which is assist the Mesa City Council in coming to a just resolution in this case. And in doing so, it's important to present sort of relevant facts to this body instead of trying to keep them from you. So I guess it simply falls to me to present the case for Mr. Winkle, even though I think that it's not served the council well that Mr. Workin has presented such a one-sided case and has proceeded as a prosecutor, even though that was never his public charge. Mr. Winkle will testify in depth about the circumstances, his contrition, the circumstances regarding the grossly out of context statements that have been presented for Mr. Policar and the erroneous recounting of that meeting. And I would like to also say that we have to, when Mr. Winkle obviously made a terrible mistake on that night, that's the reason we are here, clearly. But we do have to, in seeking to hold someone accountable for a violation of the law, we also have to look at what the law is that permits us to do so. I've presented, I think, a very compelling memorandum to this council regarding exactly what the charter says on this matter. It includes punishment for certain offenses. It talks about in very specific detail about what is required for removal for office, and I think we just have to keep in mind that in our desire to hold people accountable for a violation of the law, we not also discount that law. Now, I know it's a civil law. There's no comparison to a DUI, but we all need to adhere to the law. And I think that there's a very compelling case that this is as serious as it is, it's a misdemeanor conviction, and it doesn't involve violence or any of the other items that are laid out in the city charter. Now, as to Mr. Workin's position, is that it's whatever you say it is in terms of what's conduct unfitting. Well, I would submit to this body that that's a sort of a bad precedent for elected officials to set that, you know, we're going to say that we're the sole judge of fitness for office. Not only are we going to say that, but we're also going to say that unfitness is judged purely in our eyes. We in Arizona have a very robust recall provisions. They've been utilized in this very area, a state, to remove a state legislator. They are very much something that can be used against any elected official, and this is a matter that should be left to the voters. I know this council is a very important body. It makes very important decisions, but in the case of deciding under these circumstances who should sit in the seat next to you, I would respectfully submit that should be left to the voters of Mesa. So with that, I'll let you hear the testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Lasota. We'll now proceed with the special counsel's witnesses. Mr. Workin, please call your first witness.
If someone could ask Officer Espinoza to come in.
Welcome, Officer Espinoza. Prior to sitting down, please be sworn in by our city clerk.
Good morning. Please state your full name, please.
Annabelle Espinoza.
You are an officer of the Tempe Police Department?
Yes, sir.
How long have you been an officer on that force?
Approximately 10 years.
And you are appearing here this morning in response to a subpoena, correct?
Yes, sir.
And you understand that the subject of this hearing is a Mesa City Council member, Mr. Ryan Winkle, correct?
Yes, I do.
Were you on duty during the first hour of the day on Sunday, May the 7th of this year?
Yes, sir, I was.
And do you recall having contact with Councilmember Winkle during that time?
Yes, sir.
What attracted your attention to him?
the driving behavior that he was exhibiting.
And could you describe for us briefly the driving behavior that you observed?
Sure. I was stopped myself at a red light, awaiting to make a left turn, facing westbound. The vehicle, Mr. Winkle's vehicle, was heading eastbound.
What street were you on, sir?
Just on Baseline Road. And that's at the intersection with Kyrene Road in Tempe. So as I was stopped at the red light, I observed Mr. Winkle's vehicle approaching the red light at a high rate of speed. That was the first thing that brought the vehicle to my attention.
The light was red for Mr. Winkle?
Yes, sir, it was.
Excuse me, Mr. Workin, I hate to interrupt, but is the witness's microphone working?
It's on mute.
Okay. Thank you, officer.
Yeah, no problem, sir.
Okay. I think my last question was the light red for Mr. Winkle?
Yes, it was.
Okay. So he was coming at you in the opposing direction?
Correct.
Okay. Go ahead. What else did you see?
So as I was watching the vehicle approach the red light, then I realized that there were three pedestrians that were about to cross the street, that would cross in his path. And I was just waiting to basically see that he was going to stop, hoping that he was going to stop. The pedestrian started crossing the street as his vehicle approached the intersection. I don't know what the speed was, but it was quite fast approaching the intersection, the red light. And the pedestrians had to, I guess they realized it at the time, that the vehicle was still coming their way, and they jumped out of the way as his vehicle came to a stop.
So the pedestrians had a green light to cross the street?
Yes, sir, they did.
To cross Baseline?
Yes, they were crossing on Kyrene Road across Baseline.
So Winkle, was eastbound, so the pedestrians were on the south side of the street?
Correct.
And they were stepping into the lanes of traffic, or the lane of traffic in which Mr. Winkle was traveling?
Yes, sir, they were.
Okay. And what did those three pedestrians do, did you say?
They started crossing, and I don't know if they were not paying attention originally or what, but once they realized that the vehicle was coming still at them at the high rate of speed that it was, then I saw them jump out of the street, basically, jump out of the way. Two of them jumped back into the sidewalk, and the third person jumped forward, basically, in further into the intersection.
And was any one of them so making such an evasive motion that he or she dropped something?
Yes, sir. One of the three dropped their phone as they basically jumped out of the way.
What did you do next?
I continued to observe the vehicle as it came to a stop, and at the moment I made the decision that I would stop the vehicle. Once my light turned green...
Let me interrupt you, if I may, officer. To bring the vehicle to the stop, did you notice anything unusual about the manner of stopping?
It just stopped abruptly, kind of like a last moment type of stop, like it applied hard braking or...
Hard braking?
Yes, sir.
All right. So, I'm sorry, go ahead.
So once my light turned green, since I was waiting to make a left turn, I made my turn ahead of him, ahead of the vehicle, and that gave me an opportunity to turn around. And then once his vehicle crossed the intersection, then I was able to get behind him.
So you had a green arrow to make a left turn in front of him?
Yes, sir.
Okay. And he went through the intersection then?
Correct.
And you followed him?
Yes, I did.
For what distance?
I'm not quite sure what the distance was. It was approximately a mile, maybe a half a mile. I'm not sure.
To another intersection?
Correct.
And what did you observe as you followed?
As I drove behind the vehicle, it stayed in its lane, which was closest to the curve, but it continued to swerve back and forth in the lane. It wasn't going out of the lane, but it was swerving, kind of bouncing back and forth in the lane that it was traveling in.
Did the car ever strike or nearly strike a curb?
It came close to striking the curb a couple of times.
Did you decide to initiate a stop?
Yes, sir, I did.
And what point or what location did you do that?
Once the vehicle approached Mill Avenue, which was the next easternmost intersection, then I initiated a stop.
Do you recall or did you make note of what time of day that was?
I can't think of what time it was. I could look at my report and tell you, but I don't recall what it is.
At some point after this matter, you prepared a report, is that correct?
Yes, sir.
I'm sorry we don't have a display of this on the screen.
Officer, equipment working? There we go.
There it is. Officer, there is a book of exhibits in front of you, a binder, to your left there. And if you'd look at tab 4, you recognize that as your report? I'll let you get there. Number 4?
I believe tab 4 is Officer Jensen's report.
I beg your pardon, I misspoke. It's tab 1.
Tab 1. Yes, sir, that is my report.
Okay. And it begins with the notation that on May 7, 2017, at approximately 0043 hours, you observed the vehicle. So,
yes, sir.
Your observation began at that moment, at that time.
That's correct.
And the stop was shortly thereafter.
Correct.
Were you wearing a body camera that evening, that morning?
Yes, I was, sir.
Do the body cameras also record audio?
Yes, they do.
After making the stop, did you approach Mr. Winkle's vehicle?
Yes, I did, sir.
How you guys doing?
Yes, sir. How are you?
Where you headed to, bud?
Mr. House. Mayor,
okay,
I
where you come
would
from?
Like to object at this
right
point.
Right down the street.
Mr. Workman.
Okay. You got a license?
I'm sorry. Go ahead, Mr. Lasota.
This is cumulative. We have the audio of the this already in the binder. I certainly don't object to its admittance. We have Officer Espinoza testifying. I don't know why we have to see this.
Okay, I'm going to overrule the objection. I don't consider it cumulative at this point, but thank you.
Okay. Officer, I'm going to play a clip taken from your body camera video.
How you guys doing?
Yes, sir. How are you?
Where you headed to, bud?
To our house.
Okay, where you come from?
From right down the street here.
Okay. You got a license with you, sir?
Yes, I do.
Any weapons in the car?
No, I do not.
Okay. Purple 31. Is there an available motor for tonight? Do you know where you guys were coming from? Or what?
Yes, we actually started arguing on the way here, so we're actually going through her house, and we're arguing, sorry, we got in a big fight, we're in a couple, so.
Okay. How much you had to drink tonight, bud?
Nothing at all.
Nothing at all?
Yeah. Okay. Officer Espinoza, was that your initial interaction with Mr. Winkle?
Yes, sir, that was.
What observations did you make regarding his physical condition?
At the moment that I started talking to him, I realized that his speech was a bit slurred, and I could smell a distinct odor of alcohol coming from the vehicle.
Did you ask him to step out of the car?
Yes, I did.
Did you observe anything about his balance?
Yes, once I asked him to step out of the car, and I saw him get out, and I noticed that his balance was a little bit shaky, a little bit off. At the time, once I was also speaking to him a little bit closer, I could smell alcohol coming from his breath and body, and I could, at that time, see that his eyes were red and they were bloodshot and watery.
At some point, did you request the assistance of another officer?
Yes, sir, I did.
Why did you do that?
A couple of reasons. Normally for nighttime DUIs, there are officers that do DUIs, the DUI squad, and they either assist us whether, you know, we have something else that we need to take care of and we need to not get engaged in a DUI. They will take a long time. That was initially my thought when I requested him.
Who was the officer that arrived to assist you?
Officer Jensen.
Did you turn the investigation over to Officer Jensen after he arrived?
Yes, I did.
Okay. At some point during the stop, did you talk to the passenger that was in Mr. Winkle's car?
Yes, sir, I did.
And did she identify herself to you as Erica Varela?
Yes, she did.
Did she make any admissions to you, any statements to you admitting that Mr. Winkle was intoxicated?
Yes, she stated that they both had been drinking at whatever place it was that they were, party or something.
Did she make any statement to you regarding whether or not he should be drinking, should be driving?
Yes, she did.
What did she say?
She stated that, if I can recall correctly, that they probably should have used a cab or something along those lines, and I told her that was probably a good idea.
Let me play another excerpt from your body camera video, sir.
Okay. you guys had a little argument when you were driving or something?
We were driving because he was, yes, we did have a drug argument. But I should have been driving because he was obviously intoxicated, but.
Was that Ms. Varela?
Yes, sir, that was.
Okay. And that was one of the statements that she made to you regarding his condition?
That's correct.
Going back to your report, that's marked as Exhibit 1.
Yes, sir.
Are the statements in your report true?
Yes, sir, they are.
I have no further questions.
Thank you, Mr. Workin. Mr. Lasota, Cross?
Yes, thank you, Mayor. Councilman Winkle was not charged with endangerment, was he?
I couldn't tell you that because I didn't do that part of the investigation, so I don't know, sir.
Well, do you mind turning to tab 5?
Sure.
Can you identify that, please?
That looks like a citation issued by Officer Jensen.
Okay. Do you see an endangerment charge on there?
No, I do not, sir.
Do you see anything about lying to a law enforcement official?
No, sir.
Okay. Citation for running a red light?
No, sir, I do not.
And Councilman Winkle, the first thing that caught your attention was the abrupt stop at the intersection, correct?
That's correct.
But he didn't run the red light, correct?
No, he did not run it.
Okay. That's all I have.
Thank you, Mr. Lasota. Mr. Workin, any redirect?
No redirect. May he be excused?
Yes. Thank you, officer.
Thank you, sir.
Mr. Workin, next witness?
I would next call Officer Jensen.
And Mr. Mayor, I'm going to make the same objection. This is going to be cumulative again.
I see the potential, but I think we've got two different perspectives on one incident, so I don't think it rises to the level of being cumulative yet, but thank you. I'm sorry, officer. Before you sit down, please be sworn in.
Yes, I do.
Good morning, officer.
Morning.
It might be necessary for you to bring yourself closer to the microphone. It doesn't seem to want to come closer to you.
All right.
Would you state your full name, please?
Sure. I'm Eric Jensen, J-E-N-S-E-N.
Are you a Tempe police officer?
Yes, I am.
How long have you been serving on the Tempe police force?
Close to 5 years.
Are you appearing here today in response to a subpoena?
Yes.
And you understand the subject of the hearing is Mesa City Council Member Ryan Winkle?
Yes.
Were you on duty during the first hour of Sunday morning, May the 7th, 2017?
Yes, I was.
And do you recall having contact with Mr. Winkle at that time?
Yes, I do.
What was the reason or occasion for your contact?
I responded to a request for assistance from Officer Espinoza from Tempe Police. He had made a traffic stop on a vehicle, suspected that the driver was impaired, and asked for the assistance of a traffic enforcement officer.
Do you have some greater expertise with DUI investigations than did Officer Espinoza?
I have some special training beyond basic training as it relates to DUIs, yes.
Were you also wearing a body camera that morning?
Yes, I was.
In your encounter with Mr. Winkle, did you ask if he had been drinking?
Yes, I did.
And did he deny?
He denied consuming any alcohol, yes.
If I may, let me play an excerpt from your body camera video, sir. I'll just take
a few
seconds.
Have you had any alcohol to drink tonight?
Yes, sir.
Did you have any alcohol earlier today?
Yes, sir.
Was that you asking those questions?
Yes, it was.
And Mr. Winkle answering?
Yes.
What What did you observe regarding Mr. Winkle's physical condition?
I observed some signs and symptoms consistent with impairment.
Such as?
Such as a distinct and strong odor of alcohol or intoxicating beverage coming from his person. His eyes appeared watery and bloodshot. His face appeared flushed. And when he was speaking, his speech sounded slurred. After he was standing with me, there was a noticeable sway when he was standing.
Did you conduct any field sobriety test?
Yes, I did.
Which did you conduct?
I attempted to administer the horizontal gaze nystagmus test. That's a test of the eyes. I wasn't able to complete that test, but I did administer and complete the walk and turn test and the one leg stand test.
Let me show you what we have marked as exhibit number 2. And sir, there is a binder of exhibits in front of you, so you don't have to stare across the room at the monitor. Tab 2. Is that what's called the DUI worksheet?
Yes, and I do recognize this one.
Do you complete that as you are engaged in the investigation or afterwards?
I complete a smaller version of this form on a note card and transcribe notes from that note card onto this later.
Does the second page have a series of blocks there for the various field sobriety tests?
Yes.
And you said you used or attempted to use the first three or the top three?
Correct.
And briefly, sir, without going into great detail, how did he perform on the walk and turn and the one leg stand?
I would categorize his performance as poor and consistent with someone who is under the influence.
I'm sorry, did you say consistent with someone under
yes.
the influence?
Yes.
Did you decide to arrest him for driving under the influence?
I did.
Take a look at tab 4, sir. Is that a report that you later completed?
Yes, I do recognize it.
Does it recite the time at which you arrested Mr. Winkle?
Yes, it does.
And what time of day was that?
That was 01:04. That's 1:04 a.m.
After placing him under arrest, did you ask him to take a preliminary breath test?
Yes, I did.
Did he respond to you?
Yes.
Let me show you a clip, please, of that question and answer.
Will you do a preliminary breath test that gives you an idea of how much alcohol is in your body?
I don't want to do that, sir.
You don't want to do it?
No.
Okay, nope.
So he refused, sir?
Yes.
What did you do next after placing him under arrest?
I transported him to the DUI processing van for further processing.
We understand that the stop was at Baseline and approximately Mill?
Yes.
And where was the location for the processing?
That was on McKellips, east of Scottsdale Road. The address was 7601 East McKellips Road, which is a Scottsdale address.
Did you secure him in your patrol car and drive him to that location?
Yes, I did.
Did you have further conversation with Mr. Winkle at that processing location?
Yes, I did.
Take a look at tab 3, please. There are two pages in that exhibit. Briefly, what are those?
This is the implied consent affidavit created by Arizona Department of Transportation Motor Vehicle Division.
Are you filling this out as you are interacting with Mr. Winkle?
Yes, I am.
And if I could, able to use the pointer. On the first page, under admonition, there's a box check to the question, will you consent to a test? And then the box after that is checked no, correct?
Correct.
And you wrote in, was that your notation in quotes there, no, sir?
Yes, it is.
And is that, say, 0200?
Yes, indicating the time of 2 a.m.
At 2 a.m. And no, sir, was a quotation of what Mr. Winkle said.
Yes.
Did you then go on to explain, pursuant to this form, that if he did not consent, he would lose certain driving privileges?
Yes.
And were you asking him, he had already refused to submit to a breath test. Are you asking him here to submit to a blood test?
Originally, I was asking him for consent to blood, breath, urine, or other bodily substance.
Okay.
Later, I clarified for him that I did intend to administer a blood test.
And after advising him of the consequences of losing his driving privilege, did he consent to a blood test?
Yes, he did.
And is that your notation of what he said there about in the middle of the page, quote, yes, sir, unquote?
Yes.
And that was at 2:01 a.m.?
Yes.
And he said he would submit to a blood test, but not a breath, a blood test only, but not breath?
Correct.
And what is the second page of Exhibit 3, officer?
This would be the face sheet of the admin per se implied consent affidavit.
So I actually have these two pages in reverse order?
That's correct. As I see this form, this is the first page.
All right. And this is also a form that you filled out?
Yes, and I do recognize it.
Was his blood drawn at that location?
Yes, it was.
Did you witness the drawing of the blood?
Yes, I did.
Do you make some notation in your report at what time the blood was drawn?
Yes, I do.
And maybe you could help me find that in Exhibit 4. On the third page, second full paragraph.
Yes, that is the portion of my written narrative that I discuss witnessing the blood draw.
And that occurred at 2:03 a.m.?
Yes.
After the blood draw, did you take custody of the vials of blood?
Yes.
You impounded them as evidence?
Yes.
And then did you complete the DUI worksheet from your from the note card that you had been using?
Yes.
When you were at the processing center talking to Mr. Winkle, did you ask him again about whether he had been drinking?
Yes.
You were doing that as you were going through the forms, the consent forms?
Yes.
You still had your body camera on at that time?
Yes.
Let me play this clip for you, sir.
Next question is, where were you drinking alcohol?
That's all you gotta do. You don't have to tell them you request a hearing. And then when you request a hearing, they'll hold off your suspension.
There's a series of questions about drinking alcohol. You're saying you weren't drinking alcohol?
Okay. We'll have a hearing.
That again was your voice?
Yes, sir.
And his responses?
Yes.
And so he was denying having been drinking?
Correct.
And the other noise or voices we hear in the background of that tape, was there somebody else in the processing unit or center?
Yes.
Okay. Did you issue a citation?
I did.
To Mr. Winkle?
Yes.
And is that found behind tab 5?
Yes, it is.
And with what did you charge him at that time?
A charge of Arizona Revised Statute 28-1381, which is driving while impaired to the slightest degree, and Arizona Revised Statute 28-1381A2, which is driving with a blood alcohol concentration of 0.08 or above.
But at that time, the blood had not been analyzed, correct?
Correct.
And you did not have the results of any preliminary breath test, correct?
Correct.
So based on your observation, you felt that both of those charges were appropriate with what information you then had?
Yes.
Finally, sir, with regard to your report that we referred to earlier under Exhibit 4, are the statements in that report correct?
Yes, they are.
I have no further questions.
Thank you, Mr. Workin. Mr. Lasota?
Thank you, Mayor. Good morning, Officer Jensen.
Morning.
I just want to, the first time you asked Councilman Winkle whether he would consent to a test, it was to a preliminary breath test, correct?
No, it was field sobriety tests.
But the first sort of, as between breath, blood, test, the first one of those you asked was a breath test, correct?
Are you referring to the preliminary breath test?
Yes.
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. So is it fair to say that the first time you asked him, it was just for the preliminary breath test?
Yes.
But then subsequently, when you asked him if he would do a blood test, he said that he would, correct?
Correct.
Okay. No further questions.
One question. But when you first asked him if he would submit to blood, when you were back at the processing center, you asked him if he would submit to a blood, breath, urine, or...
other bodily substance.
Test, he refused, correct?
Correct.
All right. Thank you, sir. May this witness be excused?
Yes. Let me just remind counsel that counsel has the right to ask questions. So perhaps prior to excusing this witness, any questions from counsel? Okay. Thank you.
I next call Herlinda Graham.
Mayor, I object on relevance and cumulative nature. I really don't know why we're hearing from this witness, but...
Thank you, Mr. Lasota. Again, I think we're hearing things for the first time, so I have difficulty seeing that as being cumulative, so I overrule the objection.
Good morning. Would you state your full name for the council, please?
Good morning. My name is Arlinda Graham.
It may be important for you to sort of lean toward the microphone because it doesn't seem to be able to extend any closer to you.
Okay.
Are you employed by the Department of Public Safety here in Arizona?
Yes, I am. I specifically work in the Central Regional Crime Lab.
Are you a forensic scientist?
Yes, sir.
How long have you been employed at DPS in the lab?
I actually was hired in September 2006 as a laboratory technician and promoted to a criminalist, is what we were called at the time, in December 2007. And they've recently changed our title, but not my job. It's, the job is still the same, just the title.
And your title now is?
Forensic scientist.
What are your responsibilities and duties?
I analyze blood for blood alcohol. Sometimes it's plasma serum, but it's still, you know, made out of blood parts. I also train officers on, certify them on the Intoxilizer 8000, which is the breath instrument used throughout the state. And I'm write reports on my findings and then at times testify on blood and breath cases.
Does the state require a permit in order for someone like yourself in order to perform blood alcohol analysis?
Yes, we have to have a current permit. We're required once a year to do what we call a proficiency. And we purchase, our quality assurance section purchase blood of unknown concentrations of ethanol from an outside vendor. They give it to us. We're supposed to handle it like a case, do the analysis, report our findings, give it to our quality assurance section, and then they let us know whether we pass or fail. And I'm currently, I think I'm on my 9th or 10th permit. I've never failed.
So you had a permit. You were the holder of a permit in May of this year.
Correct. Ever since I took my first proficiency in March of 2008, I've never lost a permit.
And is one of the requirements for having such a permit holding a college degree with a minimum number of chemistry credits?
To have my job, yes. You have to have a physical science degree with a minimum of 30 credit hours in chemistry, and my degree is in chemistry.
You have a bachelor's degree in chemistry?
A bachelor of science in chemistry.
From what university?
Arizona State University.
In what year did you receive it?
December 2005.
And have you received additional training beyond your bachelor's degree that's relevant to your job?
That's relevant to my job, yes. We're required to go to Borkenstein School of Alcohol and Traffic Safety, and that's a week-long course taught by world-renowned researchers on blood and breath alcohol. We're also required to continue training from senior analysts, keeping up on the scientific literature that's out, and they would prefer if we were part of an organization, which I am. I'm a member of IAC, that's International Association of Chemical Testing. I'm actually part of the training committee.
Okay. There is a binder of exhibits in front of you, Ms. Graham. If you take a look at that, please, and look at exhibit number 8. So, rather than belaboring your education, your qualifications, and your training, is that a copy of your resume or CV?
This is a copy of my CV, yes.
All right, thank you. And by the way, you are here today in response to a subpoena, correct?
Correct.
And you understand that the subject, the person that is the subject of this hearing is Mesa City Council Member Ryan Winkle, correct?
Yes, correct.
And did you have occasion to test a sample of his blood?
Yes, I did.
And what test method or instrument did you use?
We use what's called a GCFID. That's a gas chromatograph flame ionization detector. And basically what this instrument does is separates volatiles. Volatiles are just things that evaporate at lower temperatures. And we use what's called the headspace method for using this instrument.
Okay, I don't want to get into all that science. but this gas chromatograph is an instrument, a machine in the lab?
Yes, it is.
And is that instrument itself certified?
It isn't actually certified. The method is approved, and then we verify the instrument before we put it into use.
Before testifying here today, have you testified in courts around the state as an expert witness?
Yes, I have.
Frequently?
Almost 100 times now.
When you tested Mr. Winkle's blood That was done using the gas chromatograph?
Yes, it was.
And before testing an individual's blood, do you engage in some procedure to ensure that the machine itself, the instrument itself, is functioning correctly?
Well, that's actually part of our quality control measures that we have in our protocol. We have calibrators that we have at the very beginning of our run. That's what we call it. We have calibrators. The instrument's calibrated every single time. And then we have controls throughout the entire run. And we use ethanol of known concentrations in water purchased from an outside vendor. And we also use whole blood controls purchased from an outside vendor. And all of our quality control measures have to be plus or minus 5% of the known value.
Would you please take a look at tab 9 in the exhibit book? Is that the summary of the results of your test of Mr. Winkle's blood sample?
Well, this is actually what we call a report. It's the report to my findings.
All right. And what was the result of your test?
The reported value is a 0.220 plus or minus 0.011 grams of ethanol per 100 milliliters of blood.
And ethanol is alcohol?
Correct. There's many alcohols, but ethanol is the one humans drink because it's the least toxic.
This was a report that you completed on May the 18th of this year?
Yes, sir.
What do we see in the pages attached to that report?
These are the notes I take. We use a system called Medio to take notes of our evidence. We look at it to make sure it's sealed when we receive it. And then we note how many vials are in it. Was there an inner box? Was that sealed? Was there a plastic Ziploc? Was that sealed? Was there a draw time on the tubes? In my notes, at the bottom, there's a word that says notes. If the name was inconsistent from the blood tubes to the submittal form, I would have typed in right there blood specimen labeled and what I was seeing on the tubes.
Okay. Did you receive two vials of blood for testing?
Yes.
And did you test one of those two vials?
Correct.
Did you test it more than once?
Well, we always test the blood in duplicate, and the two duplicates that we do, because they're an unknown value, the duplicates have to be within plus or minus 3% of each other.
If you look at the, what might be the fourth page of the exhibit, I see some tracings, if I can call them that.
Oh, those are chromatograms.
Okay. Are those reflecting the test of Mr. Winkle's blood?
Correct. That page and the very next page are the duplicate samples that I did.
And what were the results of each of the tests?
The first one was 0.2209. The second one, 0.2206.
And quickly, if I may, take a look at Exhibit 10. Briefly, what are the documents that are collected there?
Exhibit 10 are the calibrators and controls I was talking about earlier. The first page are the results. It's kind of summation of all the results of the calibrators and controls and showing the values and how far off we were from the target value.
Basically, does Exhibit 10 confirm the proper functioning of the gas chromatograph instrument?
Yes, sir.
Whoops. Ms. Graham, if you know a person's gender and their weight and their blood alcohol content, is it possible for you to calculate how many drinks that person consumed?
Yes, I can, sir.
And in this case, Mr. Winkle, we know, is a man.
Sir, excuse me?
Yes, sir.
I forgot my calculator in my bag. I left it out there.
Is it outside?
It's right on the table.
Do you need a scientific calculator, or would a
Scientific would be a lot faster.
Okay.
A lot faster.
I left my scientific calculator at home, too.
I didn't know if I'd need it, so I... Yes, sir, that's it. I apologize.
No problem.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, sir. Okay. The information you need is gender, here a male, weight, we know from the police report, 185 pounds, and BAC from your testing, 0.22.
Okay, it'll take me just a minute. That's approximately 10.7 standard drinks. And when I say standard drink, I mean 12 ounces of 4% beer, 4 ounces of 12% wine, or 1 1/4 shot of a distilled liquor. All those vary in amounts, but they all equal to half an ounce of pure ethanol. The difference is the water in them.
Now, is that telling us the number of drinks consumed during the course of an evening or the number of drinks equivalent in a person's blood at the time the blood is drawn?
That is the number of drinks or the amount of ethanol, standard drinks, that were in a person's bloodstream at the time of draw, kind of a snapshot. It's not telling us how much they consumed before or anything like that, or if they had anything in their stomach. That's how much was in the bloodstream at the time of draw.
Are you familiar with the rate at which the body metabolizes alcohol?
Yes, it's called elimination rate.
And what is the elimination rate?
Elimination rate, I guess the easiest way to explain it is ethanol loves water. We absorb it into our bloodstream completely unchanged. The molecule stays the ethanol molecule. It doesn't want to leave our bodies because humans are mostly water. So our livers actually have to break down the ethanol into something our bodies can get rid of, and that's the acetaldehyde. So once our bloodstream goes through our body enough time, the ethanol hitting the liver and the liver being able to break it down, that's how we break it down. So it takes time.
Is there some sort of average elimination rate, you know, something like a drink per unit of time?
Well, there is an average elimination rate, but usually when I do calculations like that, I use a range. I use a low end of the range of a novice or non-drinker of a 0.01, and then a high end of a range of a very chronic drinker of a 0.03.
I'm sorry, what does 0.03 mean?
A 0.03 is the elimination rate of a very chronic drinker.
And you're relating like 0.03 similar to 0.22. That percentage,
yes,
of concentration of alcohol.
Yes, it is. It's weight by volume of ethanol.
Okay. And is there a period of time associated with that elimination?
1 hour.
Okay. So a range of 0.01 to 0.03 per hour.
Correct.
We're about finished, but are you familiar with the effects of alcohol on the human body?
Yes, I am, sir.
Are those effects progressive as blood alcohol concentration increases?
It's actually with the effects of ethanol. It's a continuum of effects that happen to a body. The first thing that's affected is your cognitive abilities, then your sensory abilities, then your motor skills. Those three always happen in that order. Within each one of those, there's subcategories, but it doesn't always happen the same way with every individual. It depends on how familiar they are with consuming ethanol. Within your cognitive abilities, that's like your hearing, attribute qualities to yourself that you don't possess, your judgment. You might become a more aggressive driver. Within your sensory, those are your eyes. So like at night driving, if it's dark and then a car goes by and there's light in your eyes and then it's dark again, it takes a long time for your eyes to be able to adjust back and forth. And with the motor, that's like walking, balance, coordination, and horizontal gaze and nystagmus, which is one of the tools officers use to be able to proceed in their investigation.
Finally, Ms. Graham, did you call my attention to the study published, and a copy of which is at tab 11 in the binder?
Yes, that's the Compton study.
You call it the Compton study?
Yes, sir. That's the lead writer of it.
Okay. And is that a study of the correlation between blood alcohol concentration and the risk of driving while impaired?
Yes, it is. The Compton study found that people driving with a blood alcohol of a 0.08 were four times more likely to be in an accident, looking at almost 15,000 individuals in their study. And at a 0.20, it was 84% more likely. At a 0.25, 154% more likely.
Would you take a look at the, I believe it's the fourth page of the study? It has a page number on it of 43. So I take it this study was published in some journal with a greater number of pages.
Correct.
Okay. You see figure one there, the relative risk estimate?
Correct.
If you draw intersecting lines from 0.22, Mr. Winkle's blood alcohol content, up to the relative risk on the other axis on the left-hand side, does that plot at about 100 times?
Yes, approximately.
So a person driving with a 0.22 BAC has a 100 times greater risk of being involved in an accident.
Correct.
Thank you, ma'am. That's all I have.
Mr. Thompson has a question. Go ahead, Mr. Thompson.
Going back to what was it called, the absorption rate or...
Elimination.
So in the police report, between the time that Councilmember Winkle was pulled over till the time the blood was drawn was roughly an hour and 40 minutes, almost 2 hours. So his snapshot in time, BAC, prior to, I guess, from the time he was pulled over, he could have been as high as or as low as?
I would not say as low as, because most people get fully absorb ethanol. Like I said, ethanol loves water, and we are mostly water. And most people will fully absorb any ethanol that's in their stomach within, usually within 40 to 50 minutes. So the likelihood the person was higher and not lower. At times in trials, I am asked to do a calculation called a retrograde. But that's only to take the blood alcohol results back into the two-hour Arizona window.
And so potentially his BAC could have been 0.24 to 0.25?
Correct.
Okay, thank you.
Just so I'm clear, correct me if I'm wrong, I think Winkle was pulled over at 0043 hours, so a quarter after midnight, and I think the blood was drawn about 2 a.m. Am I in the ballpark?
I think
there?
It was 201? 3 or 208.
Okay. So I see that as about an hour and 15 minutes. So, okay.
Yeah, it says 203. Yeah, 203 on this.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you. Any other questions from counsel? Mr. Lasota.
No questions.
Thank you, Mr. Lasota. Nothing else, Mr. Workin, for this
No, witness? May she be excused?
Yes, thank you.
Excuse me, I just wait out in the hall?
Yes, ma'am. Thank you for your testimony.
You're free to go, correct?
Okay. Thank you. Yes, we don't see it. There's not a good reason for you to stick around. Thank you.
Okay, so I can leave.
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Workin, your next witness?
I call Councilmember Ryan Winkle.
Thank you.
Mr. Mayor, I would like to call Councilman Winkle as my witness in my case and have Mr. Workin cross-examine him, but also be able to examine him as if that were a direct examination. I think it's only fair that that process be followed.
Well, I understand, but Mr. Winkle was disclosed by Mr. Workin as one of his direct witnesses, and so I think he has the legal right to call him during his case in chief as well. Obviously, you can do that during the course of your presentation as well. So we'll go ahead and hear from Mr. Winkle now.
Take the oath.
Oh, I apologize. We're going to take a quick 10-minute break and be right back here. We will be strict at 10 minutes, so at 10 minutes before the hour of 9 o'clock, we'll resume. We will resume the hearing. Mr. Workin, I believe you just called Councilmember Winkle to
Correct.
Come forward.
Good morning, Mr. Winkle. I know you need no introduction, but for the sake of the record, would you state your name?
Ryan Winkle.
On Saturday, May 6th of this year, when during that day did you first have an alcoholic drink?
There was five events that day. So the first one was probably at the Korean Kimchi Fest.
How about the Kentucky Derby party that day?
Oh, I did have one that day. You're right.
Okay, where was that party?
That was out at I don't know. It's called Turf Paradise.
So a public venue.
That's correct.
Was your wife with you at that time?
Yes, she was. No, she didn't go to the derby with me, but she picked me up and dropped me off.
Okay. What time did you arrive at Turf Paradise?
You know what? I wrote it down. I grabbed my notes, okay?
Go ahead.
Probably 2 o'clock.
And I think the horses left the gate at about 3:30-ish?
I don't remember.
Did you stay for the race?
No, I was there for a little walk, so I had to leave and go to the next thing and be back in Mesa.
So what time did you leave?
I don't know, probably about 3:15, I don't know. Enough to be back by 4 to drop off the baby.
I'm sorry, to drop
off the baby?
Your son?
Yes. Uh-huh.
And where was he dropped off?
At Erica's parents' house.
Where is that?
In Scottsdale, Arizona.
What were you drinking at Turf Paradise?
Beer, and then my friend got me a margarita.
How many beers did you have?
2, probably.
How many margaritas?
1.
Sorry, did you tell me what time you arrived at Turf Paradise?
Probably 2 o'clock. I mean, I don't remember the exact time because we were running all day.
Okay. So in an hour and 15 minutes, you had 2 beers and 1 margarita.
That's probably correct.
What was the next event you went to?
The Kimchi Fest.
That's the Korean Kimchi Festival?
That's correct.
And that was at the Korea Plaza at Southern and Longmore in Mesa?
Yes.
That's in your district, isn't it?
That's correct.
District 3.
Uh-huh.
That's another public event, correct?
Yes.
What time did you arrive there?
About 6 o'clock, I think. I don't remember exact times.
Between 3:15 when you left Turf Paradise and 6 o'clock when you arrived at the Kimchi Festival, did you have anything more to drink?
No, sir.
Did your wife go to the Kimchi Festival with you?
She did, but she stayed in the car.
And you attended that festival as a Mesa City Councilman, correct?
I don't think I was invited as that, but I mean, I guess so. I mean, people call you that when you're a councilman. They always call you that.
They know who you are.
Right.
When you're seen in public, people identify you as a city councilman, don't they?
Depending if they know you or not.
Well, especially in your district?
Yes, my district.
Okay. And you went to the Kimchi Festival because it was in your district.
I would have gone if anyone invited me to anything. I've gone to 130 or 84 events in the 4 months that I was in council, so.
Were you invited to the festival?
Yes. Well, I actually helped them kind of get it together, you know, so. The guy's a friend of mine, personal friend.
When at the festival, I assume you might have been introduced to people that you didn't know.
No, mostly well there. It wasn't extremely well attended, so the people that I talked to were just the ones that were I mostly knew.
They knew you, and they know you're a city councilman.
In fact, I invited the mayor as well. So
all right.
He was there the whole time with me.
Did you drink at the festival?
I got a beer, but I had a few sips of it and sat on a chair because it was too quick and people were at talking and stuff like that. And we were being led around into the stores and everywhere else.
So you had part of one beer?
Right. They wanted me to try a Korean beer.
What time did you leave the festival?
We had to be at the Black and White, I don't know, by 7. So I think we were there for literally 45 minutes, maybe 30 minutes.
So from the festival, did you go directly to the Black and White Ball?
That's correct. Mm-hmm. We came ready to go.
Who drove to the Black and White Ball?
Erica did.
And the location of that was the Arizona Grand Resort at Baseline Road west of Interstate 10 in Phoenix, correct?
That is true. That's true. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's the exact address, but I think so.
And you attended that event as a guest of Pinnacle West, the parent company of APS, didn't you?
I did in that case, but I had been asking around for tickets for a while. We go every year, so it's a
you. But you were hosted by APS, correct?
They gave me the tickets that we went in on, yes.
And you sat at the APS table?
I did at first, and then we sat at Mary Ravigo's table. She also brought tickets for us.
Would you take a look at Exhibit 30 in the exhibit binder, please? You recognize that email?
Yes.
And that is from Katie Prendergast, the government affairs representative at APS, correct?
Yes, it is.
And that is an email that confirms your invitation to the Black and White Ball, correct?
That's correct.
And you were invited because you are a Mesa City Councilman, correct?
No, I was invited because I asked for tickets.
Well, you were initially asking to use your discretionary funds here with the city to buy your ticket, correct?
Originally, yes, but then we decided not to because Erica's company already had tables there, and then our friends Mary Ravigo had a table there, and so we decided maybe we'll just ask around to get tickets because we go every year anyways, but we would buy them separately by ourselves if we ended up going.
But you were asking a Mesa staff member if you could use your discretionary funds for this event, correct?
Yeah, originally, yes.
Okay. And then that staff person said to you, well, maybe we can find you a seat at another table because oftentimes there are folks that are trying to fill tables, correct?
That's true. And I asked quite a few people about a separate whatever ticketing.
But it was the city that arranged for you to be invited to sit with the APS table, correct?
I would consider it that as a friend, it was arranged.
As a friend?
Right.
Who is the friend?
Scott.
Scott Butler?
Yes.
The deputy city manager?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Did you make it to the VIP reception that ran between 6 and 7 at that event?
We got there after that, and so we were a little bit late, I think.
Were you wearing a name tag that evening?
No.
You say you attend this event every year?
Yes, sir.
Can you speak up a bit, please?
Yeah, sorry about that. Yes, sir.
Okay, thank you. While there, did you introduce yourself to the folks at the APS table as a Mesa City Council member?
No, I didn't.
Were you introduced by someone to others as a City Council member?
No, I don't think I knew anyone at the table.
Sorry?
I don't think I knew anyone at the table.
But you did meet them, correct?
Well, we sat down for a minute before we left to the other table. I mean, I don't know.
Okay.
When you even meet, like, no one formally introduces, and you sit there and you say hi to people, you know?
All right. And then the table you moved to was whose table?
Mary Ravigo's.
Is that someone that knows you as a city council member?
No, she's a friend of ours from a while back. She's just a Latino news anchor.
Were you introduced to other people at her table?
Well, we already knew everyone at her table, so okay. That's why we went over there.
So everybody there already knew you?
That's correct.
And they knew you as a Mesa City Council member?
They know I am, but that's not how they know me. I knew them beforehand. These are friends from before.
So the dinner and awards started at 7 o'clock, according to the schedule I've seen. Is that right?
I think so. I don't have the exact times, but yes.
Well, I know that, you know, that seems to be indicated in the email from APS.
Right, okay, that's true, 7 p.m.
So there were awards being presented that evening, right?
Yes.
To various civic and business leaders, correct?
Yes.
So this was an event that's attended by community leaders and dignitaries?
It's attended by...
Mayor, I've got an objection. Mr. Workin insisted on examining Mr. Winkle first. I'd like him to actually ask questions that require an answer, as opposed to essentially what he's doing is conducting a cross-examination, because he didn't want to conduct the cross-examination.
Okay, well, that's noted. It doesn't seem that way to me, but Mr. Workin, please just ask direct questions, if you would.
Well, I think I'm entitled to lead him. He is not my client, and, you know, obviously there is something of an adversary relationship here, and I should be entitled to lead him.
Okay. Well, I think so far the decorum has been appropriate, but let's make sure we keep it that way.
Of course. So I'm not sure if you got to answer my last question, which was this was an event that was attended by community leaders and dignitaries, correct?
I think it's attended by anybody that wants to go. It's a very, it's a very large event. There's probably thousands of people there. I don't know how many.
Oh, okay. Including civic and community leaders?
Correct.
And some dignitaries, correct?
Yes, and business leaders and just people that want to go.
I take it that you stayed for the after party that began at 9 o'clock?
That's correct.
What were you drinking that evening there at the ball?
Well, originally they bring wine to the tables, and we didn't really drink that much at the tables because we were planning on leaving early, so we didn't want to do that. And then over time, you know, people give you a wine, so you're like, okay, I'll have one. And then we decided, okay, we'll stay for this, you know, and we'll leave the car here. And then over time, you know, you go to the after party and people get you drinks, so I don't know. I don't even remember really, to be honest.
Was there an open bar or was the cash bar?
It was an open bar for the most of the part. And then I think later it was cash, but I don't know because I don't remember buying a drink.
People were buying you drinks?
That's correct.
So besides drinking wine, what other alcoholic beverages did you drink?
I had wine the majority of the night. I think I had one tequila at one point.
A tequila shot?
Like in a glass with ice, water.
I'm sorry, I'm not clear.
Tequila, ice, water, it's a drink, you know.
Tequila on the rocks?
With water.
What time did you leave the after party?
Probably like 12:30, 1, whenever we got pulled over, and we left right then.
So you effectively, you closed the party?
When we left, there was a lot of people in line to leave, yes.
I mean, you stayed to the scheduled end of the party?
Yeah, and there were still people, I mean, a lot of people there still. I mean, it's a very large event, so we were kind of probably one of the first groups to start leaving, but there was a big line to leave.
You have any notion of how many glasses of wine or bottles of wine you drank that evening?
No, I don't. I'm sorry.
As you left the ball, who was driving?
Originally, Erica was.
At what point did you switch and get behind the wheel?
I don't know, probably somewhere before Kyrene, but we decided to just change, and when I got behind the wheel, it was probably around right before Kyrene.
So that would be within minutes of leaving the ball, correct?
That's correct. Mm.
And your destination at that time was where?
I don't remember if we were going to go home or if we were going to go to her parents' house for the night, but I don't know. We were going to one of the homes.
And where is your home?
On Alma School and Baseline.
And you said the grandparents' house is in Scottsdale?
That's correct, off the 101.
And that's where you had dropped off your son?
Yes, sir.
Sir, I take it from what I have seen in your writings and in your public speaking since this event that you take great pride in your service to the city of Mesa as a council member, correct?
Absolutely.
And being a council member is part of your identity, isn't it?
Well, right now it is. It's my, you know, I was elected, so yes.
And council members don't have regular or set hours, do they? It's not a 9-to-5 job.
I mean, you have office hours, but you're right. I mean, you could be called a council member anytime, anywhere, so yes.
And so when you're outside of your home, moving about the community and interacting with people, you consider yourself a Mesa City Council member, don't you?
I mean, if I'm on business for that, yes, but if not, then no. I try to remain low-key.
And you realize that people are arrested every day for DUI and we never hear anything about them or their arrest.
That's true.
But your arrest was in the media the very next day, wasn't it?
That's true.
And that's because you're subject to greater scrutiny because you are an elected official, correct?
That's true.
Exhibit 13 in the binder contains or includes criminal complaints that were issued against you after the original citation that you received the morning of your arrest, correct?
It looks like it, yes. These are the ones from the court?
Yes, from Tempe City Court.
Okay.
And so in addition to the citation that you were issued by the officer, Jensen, for impairment to the slightest degree and suspected blood alcohol content greater than 0.08, after your blood was tested, you were issued two citations, one for extreme DUI greater than 0.15 and a second for extreme DUI greater than 0.20, correct?
Yes.
And on the third page, you later pled guilty to extreme DUI, didn't you?
That's correct.
To the greater than 0.15 charge?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That's a yes?
Yes, sir. Okay.
And this is your plea agreement, isn't it, that's in front of you?
Yes,
third page of the document that's on the screen?
Yes.
Yeah. And you were sentenced to 110 days in jail, isn't that right?
Yes.
And 55 of those days could be suspended, correct?
That's correct.
And you have, in fact, spent 6 days in jail?
I did.
And after your release, you were under what's called home detention, weren't you?
That's correct.
Are you still?
Yes, sir.
And that was to continue for, and is to continue for 49 days, correct?
Correct, until September 14th.
Pardon me?
Until September 14th.
So the 6 days in jail and the 49 days of home detention, that's the equivalent of 55 days in jail, isn't it?
Well, that's correct. Not physical jail, but I guess a perceived jail.
I have a question. Is my microphone on? Is this leading into something relevant? I'm just making sure that we're not asking questions.
It is indeed.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, and I'm moving on. Thank you. You previously had a DUI conviction in Scottsdale in 2009, didn't you?
That's correct.
And when running for this office in 2016, you completed a candidate survey at the request of the Arizona Republic, didn't you?
Yes.
And in response to that survey, you acknowledged your previous DUI conviction, yes?
That's correct.
And you claimed that you had learned your lesson and grown from the experience. Is that right?
That's correct.
And that previous lesson was not an inexpensive one, was it?
No. These are always expensive.
Okay. And you were jailed then for 45 days, correct?
Yes.
And I assume you lost time from work and lost wages?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Objection, relevance, I don't know where we're going with this. He's established that he's already had a DUI conviction, which everyone already knew to begin with.
Thank you, Mr. Wergen. I see the point you're making, so I'll allow it to go forward a little bit longer.
And I'll wrap that up. And you, at that time, you paid various fines and fees, didn't you?
Yes.
And if you look at the exhibit behind tab 18, spouse isn't cooperating. The last couple of pages of that exhibit, sir. Does that contain a schedule of the amounts you paid for that offense?
Yes. I'm sure there was more, though, because of the classes and such that you have to pay for as well outside of it and interlocks and everything else.
Would you have any reason to disagree with me if I told you that the amounts listed there schedule total $6,780?
I'd have to add it up, but if you did, I'll take your word for it.
Thank you. And you also said there were fees that you, or expenses you had for classes and such?
That's correct.
And you also had attorney's fees as well at that time?
Yes, sir.
But obviously those consequences back then in 2009 didn't deter you from drinking and driving again, did they?
Well, I mean, I drunk and drove, so no.
This week you had published in the Arizona Republic a My Turn column.
Yes, sir.
And I apologize that this is appearing sideways. But you can rotate the binder.
What tab is it?
Tab 29. In the second paragraph, you write, throughout my adult life, I have at times had too much to drink and made poor decisions while impaired. Is that a way of saying that you've had a drinking problem these years?
Yes, sir.
Did you ever drive impaired between the 2009 conviction and May 7th of this year?
Maybe. I mean, I don't know. I usually try not to.
Usually try not to.
Right.
And in this My Turn article, you admit that you lied to the police, correct?
Yes, sir.
And you did, in fact, lie to them.
Yes.
You lied to them when you repeatedly said you had not been drinking.
Yes, sir.
I have no further questions.
Thank you, Mr. Workin. Mr. Lasota.
Thank you, Mayor. And I, just as a housekeeping measure, as long as Mr. Winkle's on the witness stand, I'm just going to proceed to ask everything I would have asked anyway, if that's okay.
Understood. Thank you.
Mr. Winkle, can you take us through in a little bit more detail the events of May 6th, the Saturday? Can you tell us, start that day off for us, if you would, please?
So I got up probably around 5 o'clock and started getting ready because we had a big day of events. It's been vigorous 4 months of going to events and doing constituent services and such. I was invited to go to Luna Landing, which was kind of in East Mesa, so I went to that around 7:30. Once again, I don't know exact times, but that's when it was. Then we stayed there for a while, then went to the high school firefighter graduation. And then I went over to, which was also on East Mesa, then I went to South Phoenix for the the Asian American graduation, which I was a speaker there. And then I went to North Phoenix to Turf Paradise for the Kentucky Derby, where I stayed for a little bit. Erica picked me up. We went and dropped the baby off around 4.
Okay, let me stop you there. So Erica drove you and picked you up from Turf Paradise. That's your testimony?
That's correct.
Okay. Now, you talked about the baby. Would you identify the baby?
Ryan, our son.
Okay. Yeah. When was he born?
February 12th, 2016.
Okay. Now, you dropped him off at your in-laws,
yes,
correct?
Yes, sir.
Mm-hmm. Were they, what was the plan at that point?
It would be, since we go to this event every year and it's one of our favorite things, it was kind of like our date night, you know? And it's the first date night we've had in probably since he was born, actually, because I'm really, I don't like leaving him anywhere. So, you know, I don't like leaving overnight. And then her parents have been asking us for months, hey, can you leave him? Can you leave him? And we're always saying no. But finally, we're like, yeah, we need a night together. So let's go out.
So your plan was to leave him for the night?
Correct.
Had you ever left him for the night anywhere other than when he was with you?
We generally don't leave him anywhere past 9 o'clock or 8 o'clock, if possible.
Okay, but prior to May 6th, had he ever spent a night apart from both you and Erica?
No, never. He still hasn't, really.
Okay. Now, okay, so we went over the Kentucky Derby and the Korean Market, and your wife drove to the black and white ball,
that's
correct?
That's correct, uh-huh.
Okay. Now, in terms of can you just describe when you talked about you did have a number of drinks at the black and white ball. Did you ever actually go to the bar to get a drink?
No.
Okay. So drinks were essentially either bought by someone else or just sort of filled by someone who came to you.
That's correct.
Okay. Now, would you say that you were feeling maybe a little bit more freedom? That
actually, you know, when I first got there, I wanted to leave early. I didn't really want to go to the event in the first place, but we ended up going. And I originally thought, let's leave early because we'd done so many things today and I was kind of tired. But once people started kind of bringing wine and we were drinking it, I felt like I feel better, you know, and maybe we can hang out a little longer and that kind of stuff, you know.
Were you worried about, I mean, as a relatively new parent, do you worry about your son when he's not around?
Yeah, I'm thinking about him right now, actually.
Okay. Do a couple of drinks, do they relieve some of the parental worry?
Generally, yes.
So just why did you have too much to drink? Can you just tell us in your words?
I think originally, you know, like I said, we didn't want to stay long, so we had one drink, and then we were going to leave early. And then once it kept on coming, it was like, well, now I feel kind of like can let loose a little bit after so many months and years of just really kind of running, you know, hard. And so it was like our first night out, and so I thought, I don't know, we'll take an Uber and we'll just get a cab and we'll hang out a little bit, you know?
Okay. And I think your testimony was that your wife started out driving?
That's correct.
Okay. Now, Mr. Workin, in his questioning, sort of made it sound as if that you closed the black and white ball. Were there still a number of people there when you left?
Yeah, there was many, many people there when we left. I mean, we were in a line of people leaving, but there was a lot of people still there.
Okay. Were you recognized for an award at the black and white ball?
No.
Okay. Now, you also talked about going to the black and white ball when you were not a council member.
That's correct.
You said you went every year. Can you describe sort of how many years in a row you've been prior to this year?
I think we went twice before this.
Okay. And why did you go?
It's like the premier event, you know, for Latinos in Arizona, pretty much. That and like the other ones, the Datos thing for the East Valley Hispanic Chamber, which I always go to as well.
Okay, but it's not hardly just elected officials who go. Business leaders.
Probably thousands. I mean, I don't know. It's a giant room.
Right. Okay. Now, do you feel you made you made the wrong decision driving?
Absolutely.
Okay. And you feel you made the wrong decision in not at that particular moment admitting that you'd been drinking?
Yes, definitely.
Okay. Now, describe, if you would, for me, what has happened in this process, what you've done. So let's start out with, okay, so you pled guilty.
Correct.
So you could have gone to trial. You could have said, well, you know what? There wasn't a justification for the stop. I'm going to try to get all the evidence suppressed. But you gave up that right, and you pled guilty, correct?
That's correct. The attorney wanted to take it to trial, but I didn't want to. I just wanted to get it over with.
Okay. Now, how many days did you actually serve in jail? And I think everyone knows what in jail means. It means behind bars.
Six.
Okay. In the immediate aftermath of the arrest, how would you describe your state of mind?
I don't know. I was just shocked and, you know, mad at myself and, I don't know, depressed.
Did you go through episodes of denial?
Well, absolutely. You know, I mean, there's a lot of things that happen. You don't feel good, you know. It's not a good situation.
Would you describe in a little bit more detail your emotions?
I guess you start recounting everything that happened that you can actually remember and start thinking, like, what happened, what, you know, who do I call, what do I do? I don't know. It's just very confusing and embarrassing and sad.
Are you embarrassed?
Right now, yes.
You feel bad?
Terrible.
Let's talk about what you've done to attempt to address the problem you described in your My Turn column. Can you go into a little bit of detail about what you've done?
So right after, I decided to go to do things kind of up front and quickly so I didn't have to wait for someone to tell me to do them. I went to a couple different AAs. And I went to Southwest Behavioral.
AA's Alcoholics Anonymous?
That's correct.
Okay. All right. What's Southwest Behavioral?
It's a addiction counseling place. Or a substance. I don't know. They do a lot of stuff, but that's kind of why I went there.
What about Mothers Against Drunk Driving?
Yes, there was a person who kind of challenged me to go to a panel, so I went.
Okay.
And met them there.
Now, I'm going to give you a list of the exhibits, and turn you to tab one and ask you to describe essentially those exhibits, that exhibit, the pages in that exhibit.
These are the sessions for Southwest Behavioral, I think, yes.
Okay. Now, what is actually mandated by the court for you to do in terms of your conviction, in terms of treatment?
There's alcohol classes that you have to take from a Tempe screening place.
Okay. But you've not been able to start those yet?
That will begin September 6th.
Okay. Well, tell me the process.
So they tell you to do a number of things, like as far as getting an interlock and having to show up for different things. And so one of those things is you get a screening that is certified alcohol. I don't know what they're called, but they kind of assess you and say you have to take so many classes for alcohol knowledge or alcohol addiction, or I guess to try to teach you about alcohol and the damages that it can do.
Okay, but Southwest Behavioral is not part of the court-mandated treatment?
No.
Okay. What about Alcoholics Anonymous?
No, I went on my own.
What about MAD?
No, I wasn't required, but I went because I thought I should check it out.
Okay. Do you feel you could still be an asset to the city of Mesa?
Absolutely.
Why?
It's what I love doing.
But how can you serve your constituents?
Working hard. Being there, answering questions, taking initiatives, showing up.
Okay. Do you want to keep serving?
Yes.
May I have a moment, Mayor?
Of course.
Mayor, I don't know if Mr. Workin wants to still call Mr. Policar. If he does, I'd like to reserve the right to call Mr. Winkle on those issues.
That'd be fine.
May I just ask him? All right. If he's calling Mr. Policar?
At this point, Mr. Lasota, I am going to not call any further witnesses in my case in chief, and I'm going to rest on the exhibits that I've submitted.
Okay. All right. Well, I would just very briefly then, I would turn you, if you'll look in the, it's actually the large black binder. And it's going to be exhibit number 20. Are you there?
Yes, sir.
Now let's just start with paragraph 9. Did you ever say that your strategy would be to attack the Tempe Police Department?
No.
Okay. Have you ever publicly attacked the Tempe Police Department?
No.
Have you ever called any of the officers who testified a liar?
No.
Okay. Not to Mr. Policar privately and not to anyone publicly. No. Is that your testimony?
That's correct.
Okay. Now, would you describe what it... Tell me why you talked to a PIO.
that the idea is that they kind of help you with the, I guess, plan to talk to the public.
Would you say it sometimes serves as a reality check? Well, let me rephrase that. I mean, let me put it in this context. I mean, when I'm going to do something, sometimes I talk to someone and who I trust, and they tell me I'm acting foolishly, or I wouldn't do that. I think that's a bad move. And then I chart my course because I've had that reality check. Would you say that's one of the reasons you talked to Mr. Policar?
Yes, it's a filter, I guess.
Okay. Now, do you think that, well, you've already testified maybe denial was a little bit of one of the emotions you were feeling. But do you feel as if in your conversations you tried to minimize your actions with Mr. Policar?
Originally he was helping to assist on the first kind of action, you know, what we're to do at first, but then yes, after that first, statement, we were cutting off interaction, yes.
Okay. But the things he said you planned on doing about attacking the Tempe police, you never did.
No, I mean, we had conversations, but they're just taken out of context as to what was actually said.
Okay. If I may have a moment. Okay. Well, what did you tell Mr. Policar?
In regarding to this 9, I've said that I don't remember seeing the people there, but, you know, that's...
But you didn't say that he was a liar, for the cop, for saying that?
No.
Okay. I don't have anything else.
Thank you. Mr. Workin, redirect?
None, Mr. Mayor.
Okay. Thank you. So we're done with this witness. Any additional questions from either side? Seeing none.
Actually, I do. I'm sorry. I do have a couple more questions. Did you, Mr. Winkle, have you had conversations with members of the council regarding the events?
Yes, I think I've been pretty frank with everybody here about what happened right away and what happened, what the events were.
Has anyone suggested a course of action for you?
I've talked to the mayor quite a few times, and he's asked me to resign quite a few times.
Okay. No further questions.
Thank you. Mr. Workin, anything else?
No, that didn't prompt a question.
Thank you. Council, any questions? Okay. I think this might be a good time for us to take another break. We're about 2 hours in, so let's take a 10-minute break and be back here at 9:42. Thank you. It is now 9:42. We'll resume. If you could please take your seats. Mr. Workin, do you have any additional witnesses?
Not at this time, Mr. Mayor. Perhaps in rebuttal.
Understood. Thank you. Mr. Lasota?
No, I don't have any more witnesses.
Thank you. That being the case, Mr. Workin, do you have any rebuttal witnesses?
Yes, I'm going to call Randy Policar.
Thank you. Mr. Policar, please come up to the clerk and be sworn in.
Good morning, sir. I know the council is that you're well known to the council, but for the record, state your full name, please.
Randy Policar.
You are employed by the City of Mesa?
Correct.
In what position?
I am the public information officer for the City Council office.
For how long have you served in that position?
Since January of 2012.
What are your duties as public information officer?
I update their websites, social media accounts, I write press releases, I will write talking points, I'll do videos for them, things like that.
Are you a point of contact for the media?
Yes. If the media wants to do an interview, they call me and I will work directly with the council members to try and set up time to work for both of them.
You work with all of the council members?
Yes, all six.
Are you assigned to a specific council member?
No, I work with all six of them.
How did you first learn of Mr. Winkle's DUI arrest?
I received a phone call on Monday morning at approximately 10:15 a.m. from a reporter from the Arizona Republic, and she had asked me if I had heard if a member of the Mesa City Council had been arrested.
Did that take you by surprise?
Yes, absolutely.
You had not yet heard from Mr. Winkle?
I had not, no. In fact, at that point, I didn't know it was Mr. Winkle who had been arrested.
During the course of that conversation, did the reporter disclose to you that it was Mr. Winkle?
I asked her if she would tell me who it was, and she said yes, it was Ryan Winkle.
What did you do next after that call ended?
After that call ended, I immediately called Mr. Winkle and asked him if it was true that he had been arrested.
What did he say?
He said yes, he had gotten arrested for DUI and confirmed what the reporter had told me.
Did you ask him if he had told anyone else within the city?
I did. I asked him if he had called the city manager, and he said no. And I asked him if he had called the mayor, and he said no. And I asked him if he had called Scott Butler, and he said no. And I asked him if he had called John Pombier, and he said no.
Sorry, who is Scott Butler?
Scott Butler is my direct supervisor, and he's deputy city manager.
And the fourth gentleman you mentioned?
John Pombier is the assistant city manager.
And that conversation with Mr. Winkle was on the morning of Monday, May the 8th?
Yes, that Monday morning.
Did he express any remorse or shame to you during that conversation?
Not at all.
When did you first meet with Mr. Winkle about this subject?
Later that afternoon, he came into City Hall, and we met on the 7th floor.
Where did you meet with him?
I believe we met in this City Council conference room, which is on the 7th floor. I have a cubicle on that floor, and that just down the hall, by all the council members' offices, is the City Council conference room.
Was anyone else present when you met with Mr. Winkle?
And Mr. Butler was in that meeting as well.
Could you relate your conversation with Mr. Winkle at that time?
Sure. We were working on a statement that we were going to put out to the media. The story had not yet broken. The reporter from the Republic was waiting for a statement from Mr. Winkle, so I wanted to make sure that we had one, and I wanted to work directly with him and make sure that we were all on the same page when we move forward with releasing it to the media.
At that time, did Mr. Winkle make any mention to you of the fact that he had had a DUI conviction, an extreme DUI conviction in 2009?
He had not mentioned it, no.
Did he express to you at that time any shame or remorse?
Not that I felt at all.
Did you meet with him again regarding the subject of this DUI arrest?
Yes, I met with him in his office later that week.
Was it the next day?
I believe it was the next day, yes.
Was anyone else present during that meeting?
I believe his counsel assistant was in that meeting as well.
What conversation did you have with him? What did he say about the DUI during that meeting?
He told me that it wasn't that big of a deal, that he thought in the long run it would be a good thing for him because now he could go talk to DUI groups and, you know, oh, I have background because, you know, I had a DUI and I can go talk to them and be kind of a keynote speaker in that sense. He mentioned that he had a whole plan on how he was going to attack this from the PR side, that he wasn't going to drink for a period of 1 year, which struck me as odd. I don't think you can put an end date on sobriety. He said that he had a social media team ready to take care of whatever was going to happen on social media. And he told me that him and his wife are going to move into a New Leaf facility, so it looked good that he was trying to get help.
Did he, at that time, express to you any shame or remorse regarding his arrest?
I did not feel that he had any shame or remorse, no.
Did you next have communication with him via text?
Yes. Sorry, I wasn't sure if you were finished.
Okay, I'm sorry. There's a binder of exhibits in front of you. If I could direct your attention to Exhibit 20.
20?
Yes. First of all, Exhibit 20... Is that an affidavit that you signed under oath?
Yes, it is.
As an exhibit to the affidavit, did you attach text communications with Mr. Winkle?
Yes, I did.
And I'm sorry. Uh, What was the date of his text message to you?
Wednesday, May 10th.
When it says, I just watched the videos and they're really not that bad, to what does that refer?
The police videos that the Tempe Police Department had, they had given them to the city of Mesa prior to release to the media. So it was the video of his arrest and all of the things that happened during the stop.
So the are you, you mean the body cam
video? The body video? Cam footage, yes. Sorry. Yes.
After that text communication from Mr. Winkle, did you have another meeting with him?
Yes, the next week. And I wouldn't use the term meeting. I mean, we met in his office, but it wasn't a pre-scheduled meeting.
But you were together in person?
Yes, correct.
At that time, during that, I'm going to call it a meeting.
It's a meeting, yeah.
did Mr. Winkle make any further comment regarding the video of the stop and arrest?
He just told me he didn't think the video was that bad.
When you say in your affidavit, and I'll direct your attention to paragraph 8, the last sentence, he thought that what his wife said to the police officers during the stop was not, quote, that big a deal, unquote. What statements by his wife to the officers was he referring to?
I believe he was referring to everything that she said to them.
Objection calls for speculation.
Sustained.
Did the two of you during that meeting talk about his wife's statement to the officer during the
stop? We did not get into specifics, no.
Okay. Did you have yet another meeting with Mr. Winkle
yes.
regarding this subject? And when was that?
The 15th to the 16th of May, the Wednesday, I think, the Tuesday or Wednesday the following week.
And where did that take place?
I was in his office.
Was anyone else present?
His counsel assistant was in there as well.
What did Mr. Winkle say at that time?
Mr. Winkle told me that he had a plan in regards to the Tempe officer. He told me that the Tempe officer was lying. There was nobody in the intersection, that the officer always does this. This is his MO. He told me he had a friend who was also pulled over for DUI in the same area by the same officer who wrote the exact same police report. And that they were going to disprove the Tempe police officer because the police officer was lying.
What was your response?
I immediately told him that that was a horrible idea and do not do that.
Mr. Policar, are the statements in your affidavit that you made under oath indeed true?
Yes.
And did I solicit you or did my office, did my partner Susan solicit you to make this affidavit?
No.
How did you and your knowledge come to our attention?
I was talking to some city attorneys during this entire thing and had conversations with them. And they asked if I would be, you know, if I was sure about what I said and, you know, if I would be willing to do an affidavit. And I said, yes, I absolutely will.
Very well. Thank you, sir. I have no further questions.
Thank you, Mr. Workin. Mr. Lasota.
Yes, I do have questions. That was what I was going to start with.
Are you going to be there or are you going to be up there?
I'm going to be here.
Okay.
Is how you came to prepare this affidavit. And you've just said that you spoke to members of the legal department. Who did you speak to?
I had conversations with Jim Smith, Jackie, I believe, also. But they weren't formal meetings. They were just informal.
But you discussed this with them.
Yes.
Okay. What did they say? Well, okay, let's start with Jim Smith.
Okay.
What did he say?
In regards to what?
In regards to what you told him about what you claim Mr. Winkle said.
Mr. Policar, before you respond, Mr. Smith.
Objection. He's not going to be able to get into an attorney-client conversation or a conversation with an employee. I mean...
Well, what about Councilman Winkle? Doesn't he have rights to? I mean,
well, I think as we know, there is a privileged communication between an attorney and a client, or in this case, a city employee. That there is no privilege that I'm aware of regarding two city employees talking to one another. So, Mr. Smith, the question is, what did Mr. Smith, who is Mr. Policar's attorney, say to him? And Mr. Smith, are you saying this is a privileged communication?
Correct.
With all due respect, Mayor, advising Mr. Policar to go trash Mr. Winkle is not legal advice.
I don't think there's any evidence that's what's occurred here. So the objection is sustained. You cannot ask Mr. Policar about conversations that he had with his attorney.
Okay. Well, I won't ask any questions about the other individual you spoke to because we're obviously not going to get an answer about exactly how this affidavit came to be. Now, Mr. Policar, in your role, has a council member ever shared compromising information with you other than Mr. Winkle?
No.
So nobody ever comes to you and says, I've got a problem, can you help me?
No other council member has been arrested in the time I've been in my position.
That wasn't my question. My question was, has anyone ever come to you and say, you know, this looks like it's a bit of a problem for me, how do we deal with this media issue?
Nothing that I would call compromising, no. They've asked me for advice.
Well, just forget the word compromising. Have they ever asked for advice? Okay, well, I stated my question.
Yes, they have asked for advice.
And maybe told you things that they wouldn't love if you went out and told everyone right away what they'd said?
No, I don't believe a councilmember's ever said anything to me prior to this event that they would not be comfortable with me sharing with someone. That's not my role to be given information. I don't know how they vote on issues in council meetings. That's not my role.
Okay. Well, why do you think do people ever come to you with advice on how to deal with the media?
Yes.
Why do you think they come to you?
Because that's my job.
Okay, but has anyone ever suggested a course of action that you have thought was foolish, other than Mr. Winkle?
There may have been one or two situations, yes.
Okay. Matt, did you run out and do an affidavit about what their previous plan had been?
Not for a situation like that. It wouldn't have been warranted.
I have a question. Has any other council member ever told you?
Wait. Let's not interrupt Mr. Lasota.
Please. It's relevant to the conversation.
Please, go ahead.
Has any other council member ever told you anything that you had a moral objection to?
No.
Thank you.
Do you warn council members before you speak to them that anything they say can and will be used against them?
No.
Have you ever been asked to prepare an affidavit recounting a private conversation with a council member?
This was other than this time, no.
Okay. Now, isn't it true that you saw the video before Mr. Winkle saw it?
I can't answer that question. I don't know when Mr. Winkle saw it. So I would say that is not true.
When did you see the video?
I saw the video, I believe, Wednesday evening around 5 or 5:30.
Do you ever remember describing the video to Mr. Winkle?
Yes.
Okay. What did you say about it?
At the time, there were six separate videos at that point when I first discussed it with him. I had only seen one of the videos, and that was the body camera that did not have his field sobriety test. At that point, the only video I had seen was with him or with his wife.
Okay. So isn't it true that you said that they'd crucify him over it?
No, I never said that.
Did you say that it was really bad?
I might have.
Okay. So in other words, in your affidavit, when he says it's really not that bad, paragraph 7, isn't it true that he's referring to the action of his wife?
It could be, but I don't know. I can't speak to what he meant.
Okay, but it could have been.
Could have been. But it could have not been.
And you've said that Councilman Winkle told you in your first conversation that his wife had started out driving.
Yes.
Correct? When they left the...
When they left the black and white bull.
Okay. Okay. Now, let's talk about, you say May 15th or 16th. Isn't it true that Mr. Winkle said that he didn't want your help?
No. It's not true.
Okay. Did you ever have another conversation after May 15th or 16th with Mr. Winkle?
I don't know about... We might have. I don't remember if we had any...
You seem to have a very good memory. You put
there
this
was at. Nothing of significance that would... We didn't have a one-on-one meeting or a one-on-two meeting at all. Okay. It might have been in passing or text messages. I know when he had his press conference, we discussed things before his press conference.
Okay. Now, this plan you claim that Mr. Winkle told you he had is... would you think it's fair to say that he did not execute the plan?
Which part of the plan?
Attacking the police officer as a liar?
Yes, I think he took my advice.
Oh, so he was convinced by you not to follow his plan.
Well, he had the plan that he was going to before he talked to me, and afterwards he didn't, so yes.
Okay. So, do you ever feel as if people come to you just to talk?
Sometimes, sure.
Do you think sometimes they feel better after talking to you?
I can't speak to other people's feelings.
Has anyone ever said, it felt good to talk?
Sure.
Okay. Is there a therapeutic value potentially, even though you're not a psychiatrist, I assume?
I make people laugh. I'm not a psychiatrist, no. I try to make people laugh, so perhaps.
Okay. If I may have a moment. That's all I have.
I have no further questions.
Thank you very much. So that was your only question or only witness on rebuttal. Is that correct, Mr. Worker?
Mayor.
So it's safe to say that both sides have completed their evidence at this point?
Yes.
Is that true, Mr. LaSalda?
Mr. Mayor, yes.
Thank you very much. That being the case, we are now at the closing statement portion of the hearing. Mr. Smith, do you have
Yeah, Mayor, just for the record, I want to make sure for the attorneys, just for the documents that we have for the clerk's office, for the record, we have the binder from Mr. Workin and Mr. Losada. The documents that you gave to the council, will make a photocopy of those and we'll provide those to the clerk's office, and those would be the documents that you would also like to be placed in the record?
I've got a copy for
Clerk's office?
I've got a copy for the clerk's office.
Okay, and so those will be the documents in the record? Any other documents? I just want to make sure from both attorneys.
Oh, I'm sorry, Randy, you're excused.
Am I released?
Yes, you are. You are free to leave.
I don't have to sit in the hallway by myself anymore.
No, the evidence has been concluded, so all the witnesses are done. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, so just the point you were making about the documents, Mr. Losada, you handed us your documents earlier. Mr. Workin, we have your binder. All of those documents
will be part of the record.
Are part of the record. There's no objection to any of the documents that have been submitted by either side. Is that correct?
Well, I mean, I don't object to their being included in the record, but I think that I did have various objections that I made for the record. So,
understood.
But no, I don't have any objection to their admittance.
Thank you. Okay, we are now at the closing argument portion. Mr. Workin, please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Mayor and Council, I do not intend to belabor the points that I made in the written hearing memorandum that was provided to you a couple of days ago. But I do want to make a couple of additional points or underscore some points. First of all, as I said in the memo, the city charter treats council members differently than ordinary city employees. Section 206 of the charter applies exclusively to the mayor, to yourselves as council members, and to citizen advisory board members. Those are people who are not city employees. The fact that a council member, the legal fact that a council member is an employee for purposes of the notice of claim statute does not make them an employee for all purposes. This matter is governed by the charter. It is not governed by the city's DUI policy. You as council members don't fit into any category or definition of employee that is found in the city's personnel rules. And you can see that there are about four different definitions or categories of employees: classified employees, at-will employees, part-time employees, and another that I can't recall. I provided those personnel rules to you among these documents not because I admit that they apply to Councilmember Winkle, but to show you that they do not apply. Likewise, the DUI policy was provided to you not because I argue that it applies to Mr. Winkle, but to show you how actual city employees in the same situation as Mr. Winkle could be treated, specifically that they could be separated from their employment after being convicted of DUI and being sentenced to 30 days or more in jail. Now, even though that DUI policy doesn't, in my view, apply to Mr. Winkle, it's argued that it does, and if you were to assume that it does, Mr. Winkle is incorrect in the argument that has been made to you in writing that removing him from office, separating from him from employment, so to speak, would be contrary to the city's DUI policy. As his plea agreement shows, he was sentenced to more than 30 or more consecutive days in jail. He was sentenced to 110 days, 55 of which may be suspended. Obviously, 55 is more than 30. Now, he seems to only count his 6 days behind bars. But by statute, because he was sentenced to also do home detention for the remainder of those 55 days, 49 days of home detention, by statute, and you have the statute as exhibit number 15 in the binder, in the very first paragraph A, it provides that home detention shall be treated the same as confinement in jail. So it is simply a legal mistake to argue to you that he was not sentenced to jail for 30 days or more. Indeed, he was. And therefore, the policy, the city's DUI policy, if it were to apply to him, if he were an employee, would justify his separation from employment because of his conviction. It's already been noted at least a couple of times here this morning that you are the judge of the grounds for discipline. And there are two that we are talking about: violation of the code of ethics and conduct demonstrating a lack of fitness for office. Within the code of ethics, there is a requirement that a council member comply with all applicable laws. That requirement is not limited to any specific or particular laws. Neither is it limited to being law-abiding only when you are acting as a council person. The other conduct demonstrating a lack of fitness for office is not specifically defined in the charter, but its words are plain and the meaning is clear. Any other conduct means any other conduct. Now, what conduct in a particular situation might justify removal, might demonstrate a lack of fitness for office, is something that can only be determined on a case-by-case basis. It could never have been anticipated and written in the charter back in 2000. It is any other conduct that you find demonstrates a lack of fitness for office. Again, you are the judge of that ground and of what it means. By the way, if the requirement in the ethics code to comply with all applicable laws were to be interpreted to apply to council members only when they are acting as such, well, then that means that the conduct demonstrating a lack of fitness for office would apply to a violation of law at other times. So either way you look at this, whether a failure to comply with law is a violation of the ethics code, or a failure to comply with law demonstrates a lack of fitness for office. One or the other applies here. And furthermore, this any other conduct provision is not limited to criminal conduct. It's not limited to criminal conduct that was charged. Criminal conduct that occurred that wasn't charged could be considered. And it's not limited to criminal conduct that only involves crimes of violence, dishonesty, or sexual misconduct, which is a specific ground for discipline within the charter. And the any other conduct ground within the charter doesn't distinguish between misconduct that occurs on duty or off duty. So if you find that there are grounds, one or more, for discipline in this matter, the determination of discipline, any discipline or what discipline to impose, is left to your sole discretion. The options are set forth in the charter. I won't belabor those. There's been talk and argument about progressive discipline. There is provision for that when a violation of the ethics code is found. The ethics code itself starts with a presumption that discipline shall be progressive, but it immediately goes on to provide an exception. That exception being that if this council believes that progressive discipline does not provide the appropriate sanction, either because of the gravity of the offense or because you believe that the sanction would not deter future misconduct, you do not have to begin with You do not have to impose the least punitive discipline. So to justify the imposition of greater discipline, greater than the than a mere censure, for example, under the ethics code, if you believe either of those two exceptions apply, the gravity of the offense or the lack of sufficient deterrence, you can impose greater discipline. In deciding those questions, according to the specific language of the charter, you are to consider the totality of the circumstances, and you are to consider the intent of the person accused of wrongdoing. Importantly, the charter itself does not require progressive discipline, even for a violation of the ethics code. In this situation, the extreme DUI, which was really a super extreme DUI, but it was pled down, is grave by itself. But the totality of the circumstances make it even worse. And those circumstances include lying repeatedly to the police, which was intended by the council member to deceive police and to deny responsibility for his conduct. And also we have the evidence of the intent to, although it was never carried out, the intent to accuse the police of making false statements, again, to avoid responsibility. With regard to discipline for conduct demonstrating a lack of fitness for office, again, the charter does not require progressive discipline. It's up to you to decide in your sole discretion what discipline to impose. I submit to you that if you find a lack of fitness for office, it would seem to follow that if someone has behaved in a way that makes them unfit for office, the only appropriate discipline is removal from office. Any other discipline, any lesser discipline, would be inconsistent with the finding. With that, I thank you, and I would answer any questions if you have any.
Thank you, Mr. Workin. Any questions from counsel for Mr. Workin? Thank you.
Thank you all.
Mr. Lasota.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. And I'd like to start off by saying I think Mr. Winkle has taken responsibility for his actions. He pled quickly, and that was the ultimate conclusion. It happened fast, and everything else we've heard about the bottom line is he's been contrite. He's done all the things he should have done after he was convicted. And I think that should count for something. And I'd start out also by talking about Mr. Workin's description of the DUI policy and his claim that he included it in your packet as something that did not apply. That strains credulity, and also his interpretation that jail time means time that you're home or it means a suspended sentence. It doesn't. Jail time means when you're in jail, and it says 30 consecutive days of jail time because that means you cannot, well, typically means you cannot work. As for the otherwise unfit for office, we have a specific charter provision that talks about the types of criminal activity that can lead to someone being viewed as not worthy of holding their office, and this does not fit into that category. That describes specifically what they have to do, the types of crimes. It does not, and there is no provision specifically addressing felonies, because someone who's convicted of a felony of any sort automatically forfeits their office. That's Arizona law. So, you know, this attempt to get away from the actual law and to punish Mr. Winkle for violating the law sort of goes against everything that I think the council is supposed to be here for today. Now, I will also say that if we actually examine the facts in this case, the story becomes pretty clear what happened, and it's obvious that Mr. Winkle made a grievous mistake. The day started off, he was feeling perhaps a little bit more relaxed because he would not have his child that night for the first time, and he felt maybe a little bit more freedom to perhaps imbibe the black and white kind of as a festive vibe to it that may lend itself to overindulgence, and his wife started out driving and picked him up from Turf Paradise, dropped him off at Turf Paradise, drove to the black and white ball, started to drive home, and it just didn't work out, and Mr. Winkle made the terrible mistake of taking the wheel. But that's not something that he set out to do. In fact, it was the opposite of what Mr. Winkle set out to do. Mr. Winkle, at every step of this process, every public step, has taken responsibility, has done what he should do, has accepted the sentence imposed by the court, has quickly fulfilled that jail time sentence of 6 days for his misdemeanor conviction. He has been contrite. I think anyone who even suggests he doesn't feel bad about this is just terribly, terribly mistaken, which was the testimony of Mr. Policar, that he apparently believes that Mr. Winkle feels no remorse. And I hope that members of this council don't share that sentiment, because I think Mr. Winkle, and I think everything he's done has demonstrated, he does show tremendous remorse. When one goes to the someone to help them craft a media message, sometimes I think we've all said things about what we were going to do, about, you know, maybe we were in denial, maybe we were just upset that something happened. We've said, well, you know, I'm going to do this, and it doesn't mean anything. It's just something that we say. And then when we actually act publicly, we discount those thoughts. And that's what matters. It's not that I thought about doing this and I thought better of it. If that's the standard, I mean, God knows the types of things that have crossed my mind. But you don't do that. Instead, you go talk to someone. They help you, maybe. But you, at the end of the day, you do things with deliberation and you do things with thought, which is what Mr. Winkle has done in response to his DUI conviction. He has taken responsibility for it. He has asked this council to give him another chance to do whatever he can to redeem himself. He's taken steps to address what is a problem, and he's admitted it's a problem for him, and that is his alcohol consumption. So I think when we look at this in its totality, we look at the circumstances surrounding that night, and obviously Mr. Winkle was just in no condition to act appropriately when he was pulled over, never should have been driving, and we've admitted that. But when we view this in its totality, it simply does not rise to the level of something that this council should remove a member of this body for. Mr. Workin, you know, tells us on one hand that it's up to you what discipline to impose, and then on the other hand, he says, in his opinion, anything short of removal is I forget the word he used, inadequate. you know, isn't called for. Well, why not? Why? There are a range of punishments that this council can impose that Mr. Winkle has agreed could be imposed on him. And Mr. Workin's opinion that that's not appropriate sort of goes against what he told you earlier, which is this is your decision. But I would ask you respectfully that as to this decision, this is a decision that should be left to the voters. It is a misdemeanor conviction. It is very serious, but it ought to be left to them how to judge Mr. Winkle. We have very robust provisions for dealing in situations in which the public feels that they've been let down by a member. If what everything Mr. Workin is saying were true, this is why we have recall. Now, we disagree strongly with his characterization. We're not suggesting we'd like to be recalled, but this is what we have a recall process for. So I think we've heard from Mr. Winkle. I think everyone feels his contrition, feels how badly he wants to keep serving, and feels how badly he wants a second chance. This was a very bad decision that he made under circumstances there were some unfortunate circumstances, and he made a bad decision. So with that, I would ask that whatever discipline is taken by this body, that it not include removal. He should continue to hold the seat that the voters of his district have put him in until such time as those voters remove him. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Lasota. Okay, the portion of the hearing for the presentation of evidence is concluded. The City Council must now decide whether there has been a violation of the City Charter, and if so, what discipline to impose. The charges include violating Charter Section 206B2A, which is a violation of the Mandatory Code of Ethics, and a violation of Charter Section 206B2D, which is a violation by engaging in conduct demonstrating a lack of fitness for office. Under Section 207 of the Charter, Council shall be the judge of the fitness of its members. And under Section 206, if Council finds a violation of the Charter, Council may impose discipline, including forfeiture of office, suspension, censure, reprimand, monetary penalty, letter of warning, or other forms of discipline. A written decision will be adopted today, and Council has several decision forms that allow us to adopt a written decision consistent with any motion made by Council. The Council has been provided with a full range of motions and decision forms that allow Council to make any of the various possible motions and possible findings. But before any motions are made, I want to remind and instruct the Council as follows. Council may only base its decision on the evidence received at this hearing and shall disregard anything concerning Councilmember Winkle that was not presented today as evidence. Do all of the Council members understand and agree to this? Okay, everyone has responded affirmatively. The record shall reflect that all Council members understand and agree. Before any motions are made, I would like to give Council members an opportunity to speak if they'd like. Okay. Hearing none, I am going to call for a motion. Vice Mayor Luna.
With heavy heart, Ryan, I move that the City Council find and determine, based on the evidence presented at the hearing today, that Council Member Ryan Winkle did violate Charter Section 206B2A by violating the mandatory ethics codes for Council members in Charter Section 206B2D by engaging in conduct demonstrating a lack of fitness for office, and further find and determine that the discipline for these violations shall be forfeiture of office, effective immediately, and that the written form of decision of the Mesa City Council entitled Finding Violations Imposing Forfeiture is hereby approved and shall be signed by the mayor.
Thank you, Mr. Luna. Seconded by Mr. Whitaker. We're going to now call for a vote. All in favor of the motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Thank you. The motion passes unanimously. Is there now a motion to adjourn this hearing?
Some.
Thank you, Mr. Luna and Mr. Freeman. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
We are adjourned.